Chapter 26. The Brahmin.
383. Brahmin, cut off the flow. Defeat desire with your awesome presence. Knowing that all compounded things are finished, Brahmin, you will know the uncompounded. Note. Brahmin in this chapter indicates a pure and holy person. There is an implicit critique of those Hindu priests who are ritual experts. The qualities outlined in this chapter do not refer to them, but to one who follows the Buddha Dharma in a heartfelt and consistent way. Since most readers are likely to have no cultural association to the term Brahmin, in the remaining verses it is rendered as Holy One. The note following verse 294 in chapter 21 explains that in this text, Brahmin does not refer to one of Brahmin caste, but to one who is pure and without any taint or obscuration, but is rich in wisdom. Awesome presence, Zilnon in Tibetan, refers to the capacity to overcome troublemakers so that they cannot act. Without suggesting threat or attack, the Holy One is so impressive that the minds of others lose their harmful intent. For example, when the serial killer Angulimala met the Buddha on the road, he was unable to fulfill his intention of cutting off one of the Buddha's fingers. Just the sight of the Buddha brought about a metanoia, a transformation of the patterns of his mental activity. The finishing of all compounded or conditioned things means that, since they are mental phenomena rather than so-called material phenomena, when the mind stops imagining them, they dissolve. Truly, they are mind-forged manacles. They are not intrinsic, but adventitious and developed by habit. All sentient beings already have the basis for freedom. The task is to awaken to this.
In our familiar dualistic perception,
the objects we perceive seem to be out there in the world. This is a delusion. What we experience are the fruits of compounding, of gathering together various aspects of the environment, both outer and inner, and patterning them into the shape of the object, which is then infused with our associations, memories, and so on. This arises due to the operation of dependent origination. When this is understood, we are in touch with the fact that all appearances are compounded and devoid of inherent existence. All associations, all compoundings, all seemingly fixed and reliable appearances and identities are the work of the mind. That is why they can be fully finished or exhausted, Zedpa in Tibetan. And this occurs when we cease identifying with the mental activity that generates and maintains them. 384. When the Holy One has gone to the other shore by means of the practices of calmness and clarity, then, with that knowledge, he has power over all involvement. Note, calm indicates shamatha, peaceful abiding, and clear indicates vipassana, seeing the actual. With the first, peaceful abiding, we develop stable concentration by focusing on one object, for example, on the sensation of the breath at the nostrils, or on a small rounded pebble. This becomes one's sole focus of attention. With the second, seeing the actual, one brings that focused attention to whatever is arising, usually, at first, by scanning the body to see what arises there. By simply seeing what is there, we awaken to the fact that the actual is impermanent and ungraspable. What appears to be stable and graspable are, in fact, the concepts we hold about the actual. These two practices take us from the worldly grasping bank of the river of arisings over to the far shore, where there is no involvement in the flow. One is then no longer at the mercy of the ever-changing contents of one's mind, for their power has only ever been the power that we invested in them. 385. Free of this shore and the far shore, and free of both of them, fearless and free of all involvement, is the man I call a holy one. Note, in this verse in particular, this shore indicates where sentient beings in samsara are trapped in the experience of the six sense organs. The far shore indicates their corresponding six kinds of objects, while both refers to the six sense consciousnesses which bind them together. 386. Stable in contemplation, free of faults, completely settled, free of activity and without stain, he has attained the highest value. Such a man I call a holy one. Note, free of activity does not mean paralyzed. It refers to being free of the unnecessary activity which can arise from the stimulation of the sense organs. When reactivity is pacified, compassionate responsivity is of course still possible as required. Highest value, Tibetan Don, is the quality of the unclouded mind. This bright clarity exposes all the faults of samsara, so that without the least regret, one can enter nirvana. 387. The sun shines in the day, the moon shines in the night. The warrior shines in his armour. The Holy One shines in his meditation. But the perfect Buddha shines with brilliance by day and by night. 388. A person who discards evil is called a holy one. A person of pure conduct is called a practitioner of virtue. A person who has discarded all his stains is thereby called a renunciate. 389. One should not strike a holy one, and holy ones should not respond with anger. It is bad to strike a holy one, but it is worse for a holy one to respond with anger. 390. By abandoning a preoccupation with pleasure, the Holy One gains a not inconsiderable benefit. To the extent that harmful intentions are stilled in his mind, his suffering is stilled to the same extent. 391. Whoever does no harm through body, speech, or mind, and is restrained in these three pathways, I call a holy one. 392. Just as a Brahmin priest reveres his sacrificial fire, so one should offer homage and respect to those who have enabled you to learn the Dharma teachings of the perfect Buddha. 393. One does not become a holy one by means of matted hair, family, or birth. It is the pure person who lives by truth and Dharma who is the Holy One. 394. Foolish man, what is the benefit of your matted hair and antelope skin? You wash your outside, yet within you are full of filth. Note, washing and ornamenting the body with bones, powdering it with ashes, and presenting an impressive appearance, such an image deludes others and feeds your own egotism. I am special. Look at me. 395. Wearing dust-stained rags over their emaciated, vein-covered body and meditating alone in the forest is the man I call a holy one. 396. I do not call a person a holy one on account of the mother he was born from, nor because of his reputation or wealth, But he who has cast off everything and holds on to nothing is the one I call a holy one. 397. Having cut off all involvement, he is completely without fear. Having left attachment behind, he is uninvolved. I call that man a holy one. 398. He who has cut the tie of hatred, the thong of craving, and the fetters of doubt, along with all the tendencies that support them, and who has cleared the obscuring obstacles and is enlightened, that is the man I call a holy one. Note, there are two obscurations. There is the rough obscuration of the five afflictions which, in the intensity and persistence of their formulation, blinds us to what is beneath our projections and interpretations. Then there is the more subtle obscuration of taking knowledge, information, concepts and so on to be true and reliable, so that one cannot penetrate to the non-conceptual, non-conditioned truth of life. 399. Not irritated by enemies and troublemakers, but free of anger and most patient, having the strength of an army of patience. Such is the man I call a holy one. 400. Free of anger, determined, ethical, much studied, disciplined, and in his final body. Such is the man I call a holy one. 401. Like water on a lotus leaf, like a mustard seed on a pin, whoever desire cannot touch, such is the man I call a holy one. 402. Whoever by himself fully knows the end of suffering, and has cast off all burdens, and is free of involvement, such is the man I call a holy one. Note, the end or cessation of suffering is the heart of the Buddhist teaching. When the truth of the absence of inherent existence is alive in the mind, the burden of the delusion of a grasping subject and a graspable object is laid down forever. Now there is freedom with no need to return, as there is no longer someone to be the vehicle for karma accumulated in the past. 403. The wise one, with profound clear knowing, can well distinguish the true path from non-paths, and so gain the highest value. Such is the man I call a holy one. Note, consumerist capitalism and consumerist spirituality both offer myriad non-paths. Non-paths seem shiny and useful, even necessary on first acquaintance. They are often popular and seem validated by the number of followers. Yet who amongst the makers and sellers, the teachers and students, is satisfied, deeply contented, and at peace? The Buddha Dharma has also been marketed as a spiritual add-on to improve one's life. But such cynical corruption of intention will not lead to the enlightenment pointed to by the Buddha. 404. He does not mix with householders or renunciates. Wandering aimlessly, with few desires, such is the man I call a holy one. Note, keeping himself to himself and needing only enough to survive, he wanders here and there. He has no plan of where he should go, no preference for here or there. Such aimlessness is hardly imaginable in the modern world, where focused intentionality and efficiency drive people from this specific here to that specific there. We travel in order to gain something, but the renunciate travels in order to disrupt his patterns of assumption, prediction, and necessity. Wherever he is mindfully present with precise clarity, free of all enmeshing involvement. 405. abandoning violence towards all creatures, whether moving or stationary. He neither kills nor beats. Such is the man I call a holy one. 406. Friendly amongst the abusive. Peaceful amongst those who threaten with clubs. Ungrasping amongst those who grasp. Such is the man I call a holy one. 407. Desire, anger, pride and jealousy fall from him like a mustard seed from the point of a pin. I call that man a holy one. 408. One who speaks truthfully, gently, helpfully, causing offence to none. I call that man a holy one. 409. Whether it be long or short, small or great, good or bad, the person who takes nothing in this world that is not given to them, I call a holy one. 410. In this world and the next, whoever is free of the basis for desire, who is without the basis of desire, and is free of involvement, I call that man a holy one. Note, the basis of desire is duality arising from ignorance, not seeing truthfully, but instead imagining entities that seem to have inherent existence. It seems that I am inside me and you are outside me. I am not you, you are not me. You have things, qualities, possessions, functions, and so on that I don't have. Oh, I don't have them, but I want them. So now desire is running all over the world, seeking what it likes and ignoring or discarding what it does not like. 411. Knowing all by knowing that everything is without foundation, free of the stain of doubts, and with full appreciation of the deathless ambrosia, is the man I call a holy one. Note, the foundation on which the world rests is an illusion. Appearances arise in dependent origination. There are no self-existing entities defined by an inner essence or substance which gives them inherent existence. Appearances are empty of self. The foundation of the illusion of self is ignorance, and when that is looked for, it cannot be found. When the foundation of all has no foundation, we quickly know all by knowing everything to be an illusion. Looking at the flow of mental activity and seeing its transience, and looking for the mind itself and finding nothing, we gain clarity beyond doubt, and this is the deathless or unchanging clarity, the door to liberation. 412. Whoever has stopped supporting both merit and sin is without misery and is free and pure. I call that man a holy one. Note, although in conventional terms merit and sin are clearly opposites with very different implications, in themselves, in absolute terms, they are without any foundation other than their mutual exclusion. By relaxing mental activity, the supports of these categories dissolve. They were never more than the play of the mind. Of course, until that insight is fully alive and functioning for us, all such categories should be attended to carefully, since our belief in them drives our actions, from which karmic consequences emerge. 413. Stainless and pure like the moon, clear and without fault, and completely free of craving for worldly pleasure, I call that man a holy one. 414. Abandoning the bewilderment of samsara's paths that are so difficult to traverse, having transcended conflict, and entered unwavering, stable contemplation free of doubts. All grasping is stilled. I call such a man our Holy One. Note: wandering in samsara is very hard for all beings, but it is even worse without dharma, because then we are lost and we don't have a map. The path to liberation is not featured in our cultural conditioning. We follow the tracks that seem meaningful, but then they vanish in the sand. Marriages end in divorce. Industries become obsolete, leaving thousands unemployed. Wars evict peaceful people from their homelands, and so on, endlessly. To get out of samsara, to get free, we need to see what's going on, but we are so full of assumptions that we become bewildered in the face of the truth. The first step to freedom is making contact with the Dharma and developing faith in it. 415. Whoever gives up desire and becomes a homeless renunciate, completely ending all objects of desire. I call that man a holy one. Note: the objects of desire, the things of the world, commodities, material possessions, all the items which stimulate our desires, are not other than illusions generated by mental activity. Surprising and alarming as it may be, they do not exist in themselves. Their existence is dependent on our mind. This is the marvellous basis of liberation, since, if we cut back on our mental activity, washing off the glue of attachment, we see that when the mind moves, the 10,000 things appear. When the mind is at peace, there is peace without disturbance. Thus, as is often said, freedom's key is already in the palm of our hand. Calm the subject, and the objects go free by themselves. 416. Whoever gives up craving and becomes a homeless renunciate, completely ending all objects of craving. I call that man a holy one. 417. Abandoning all human involvement, dispensing with involvement with the gods and becoming free of all involvement. I call that man a holy one. Note: profound renunciation makes the mind simple and smooth. Free of expectations, there is no judgment. Free of hopes, there is no disappointment. Wherever we are free, once the habit of subjective involvement in objects is fully dispensed with. 418. Having given up all likes and dislikes, cool and without attachment, the hero conquers the entire world. I call that man a holy one. 419. The person who comprehends all the ways in which sentient beings die and take birth, and is free of attachment to any such possibility, is a happily gone Buddha. I call that man a holy one. 420. Whoever's path is unknown to gods, Gandharvas, and humans, having ended all taints, is an Arhat. I call that man a holy one. 421. He who takes possession of nothing in the past, present, or future, who has nothing and takes nothing, I call that man a holy one. 422. The chief, the leader, the hero, the great sage, the conqueror of all, unwavering, purified, and enlightened, I call that man a holy one. 423. Whoever knows the location of his former lives, who can see heaven and hell, who has attained the ending of birth, gained the perfection of prescience, and done all that had to be done, I call That man, a holy one. This text was translated by Siar Lama and James Lowe in 1982. It was revised by James Lowe in 2018. This recording was completed in 2021 by Wendy Chozum, encouraged by James Lowe. Sound, advice and improvement by Peter Farry. May it be useful in finding freedom. May all sentient beings have happiness and the cause of happiness. May all sentient beings be free of suffering and the cause of suffering. May all sentient beings never be separated from happiness, free of suffering. May all sentient beings abide in the great equanimity, free of both attachment to those held close to them and aversion to those kept at a distance. The material in this recording is from the book Finding Freedom, published by Edition Cordon at Vondel Verlag, Berlin, 2019, and is subject to copyright. All rights are reserved and no part may be reproduced in any form without permission from the publisher.